Hello there everyone, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News. I hope you're keeping well. This week's edition is for the 8th of June, 2022.
Hello. And welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you very much, Christine, for that. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Helen, Mina, Angela, Ian, Ed, Tim, Megan, Laura, Mary, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the weekly quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger. The weather, information about long COVID, a feature on Canal Wildlife, a segment on VI Tennis, and rounding us off, we hear how a business in the UK are developing products to help those with sight loss. However, we start this week with our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We have now then, as always, some local news, brought to us by myself Rob, Ian, Ed, and first up, it's Angela.
News of poor rankings for emergency call answering by police services has been met with mixed emotions by leading police figures. League tables published by the Home Office ranked West Midlands Police as the fifth worst for answering emergency calls, while Staffordshire was ranked the ninth worst in the country. The league tables have provoked strong responses from both police and crime commissioners, with Staffordshire Commissioner Ben Adams saying the ranking was no surprise to him. However, his counterpart in the West Midlands, Simon Foster, was more direct about the figures, saying they did not recognise the complexity or quality of the calls that came in. Mr Foster said, "We simply do not have enough officers and staff working for West Midlands Police." West Midlands Police gets more calls per 1,000 of the population than anywhere else in the country, including London. The government cut 2,221 police officers, 25% of our police officers, and hundreds of police staff from West Midlands Police during austerity. We will only have 1,200 of those police officers back by 2023. To deal with record numbers of emergency 999 calls, 40 further staff are due to be put into call handling to support the hard-working and dedicated team. 850 dedicated staff and officers work in the force contact department, and further additions will have to be balanced against other under pressure departments also dealing with record demand. As well as receiving more calls per head of population than any other force in the country, the number of complex calls we are receiving is at the top end too. This means handlers are often on calls for longer than other forces dealing with difficult incidents. The government's league table is flawed because it does not recognise the complexity of the calls received, and it certainly doesn't take account of the quality of the calls either. All that is measured is how quick the phone is picked up, not even whether someone has to call back later to resolve their situation.
Staff at the University of Wolverhampton have called the university's resignation scheme chaotic cruelty. They say they've been given just 3 working days to decide whether to accept redundancy. Letters went out to staff ahead of the bank holiday. Staff say they are appalled at the scale of cuts and the process of reducing the workforce. Up to 500 people, equating to a fifth of staff, could be made redundant as the university halts student recruitment to 138 courses amidst a £20 million deficit and a 10% fall in UCAS applications. The university has a major presence in the Wolverhampton city centre and a large campus in both Warsaw and Telford, as well as a presence in Stafford. The university has put a voluntary resignation scheme into place called MARS, a mutually agreed resignation scheme, with staff told the terms would be better than compulsory redundancy. Many of the job losses are within the arts, after around 140 courses were halted, a number that rises to more than 400 when part-time, foundation and postgraduate courses are taken into account. Deputy Vice-Chancellor Professor Julia Clark told a meeting of staff and students that the decision was taken on economic grounds.
A surge in vehicle thefts has been linked by police to a shortage of car parts. Thieves across the country are stripping cars in a matter of hours so they can sell the parts for high prices, according to a senior officer. Superintendent Jim Munro of West Midlands Police today advised motorists not to assume vehicles left in car parks for only a few minutes are safe. Some 88,915 thefts of a vehicle during the 12 months to March the 7th were recorded by the 34 police forces that provided full figures in response to Freedom of Information requests. That suggests an average of 244 vehicles are being stolen every day, one every 6 minutes. West Midlands is one of 6 force areas to record an increase in thefts compared with the same period 2 years earlier. It was up 19%, a figure that compares to 28% in South Yorkshire, 25% in City of London, 12% in Surrey, 4% on Merseyside and 1% in Greater Manchester. Factory shutdowns around the world due to the coronavirus pandemic have sparked a shortage of semiconductor chips and other components in countries such as the UK. Superintendent Munro said, "What we have seen over the pandemic is there are some issues around parts supply coming into the motor industry and delays with builds. What we've seen in the West Midlands is likewise what we've seen across the piece nationally. There is a desire for certain vehicle parts, and this is fueling the theft of motor vehicle crimes." Mr. Munro described the process as unauthorised vehicle dismantling. He said vehicles are stolen, sometimes taken to nearby industrial units. People will work through the night in industrial areas, and sometimes these vehicles have been stripped in a matter of hours. The parts are then being sold on, and the shells have been waiting for scrap.
A campaign has been launched for a new pedestrian crossing amid claims speeding cars were putting children at risk outside a school for special educational needs. Parents of youngsters at Woodsutton School say their children are in danger due to traffic on Tipton Road. They say the route badly needs a crossing and have questioned why there are no patrols in place at the start and end of the day. Now councillors have written to Dudley Council's Highways team calling for the installation of a pedestrian crossing as part of an urgent review of road safety in the area. Upper Gornal and Woodsutton councillor Adam Aston said, "Tipton Road is an incredibly busy main road and the lack of a pedestrian crossing or school crossing patrol at the beginning and end of the school day is a real concern. We have written to the Councillors Highways team and asked for an urgent review of the safety of this road and the installation of a pedestrian crossing. Woodsutton School provides educational provision to primary aged children with moderate to complex learning difficulties, speech, language and communication difficulties. In recent years, Council Highway Chiefs have visited the site following concerns over a lack of parking controls. The route has been the scene of a number of serious smashes, including one in June 2019, when a driver smashed into 2 parked cars outside the school.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with another update. And this week, I've got a Volunteer Week special for you, because the Beacon Centre is marking the amazing contribution made by volunteers at the charity as part of an annual celebration of those who give their time to help others. We have 246 volunteers supporting across 25 different teams. And in the past 12 months, they've collectively spent 35,000 hours helping those impacted by sight loss. During National Volunteer Week, which runs between June the 1st and June the 7th, the charity has been marking the difference they make. Beacon's Chief Executive, Lisa Cowley, has written to all volunteers to express her thanks, and they'll also receive a certificate of thanks for their time. The charity's annual volunteer awards will also be given out, while teams will also get the chance to celebrate with some cake. That's my favourite bit, I think. Our Chief Executive, Lisa, told us that we're so proud of all the incredible volunteers whose knowledge, skills and unique experience help make Beacon what it is. Many of our charity services simply couldn't function without their support. Their time and dedication in supporting people impacted by sight loss is so appreciated by us all. In 2018, the charity's volunteers were awarded the prestigious Queen's Award for Voluntary Service, which recognises outstanding volunteer work in local communities. Now, I bet you didn't know that more than half of our volunteers give their time remotely by programmes such as our telephone befriending scheme. We spoke to three of our befrienders about what being a volunteer means to them. Nicola Gill joined our telephone befriending scheme because she wanted to make an impact on someone's life, helping them to feel less isolated and lonely. She's also a mentor to young people, volunteers at a women's resource centre, and is in full-time education studying sociology. She told us, "I really enjoy supporting people as it's really rewarding, particularly in this role, as I help people who would otherwise be lonely, which is good for their mental health. I love listening to stories of people I speak to about their younger days. They're fascinating." MA student Veronica signed up to become a volunteer telephone befriender as she has sight loss and wanted to help others in a similar situation. She said, "I know how hard and how lonely it can get when you experience vision loss. So I signed up because I wanted to help people like me. I most enjoy the connection I have with the people I talk to. I notice that the more I talk to someone, the more they open up and talk about the things they love and the things they hate, which makes me happy because it shows I'm helping them to get their emotions out and socialise, which is the main goal of befriending." Angie started volunteering with Beacon's befriending scheme during the pandemic because she wanted to help others. She's currently training to become a mental health support worker and said what she enjoys the most is knowing that she's appreciated. She told us, "I understand what loneliness means. How important it is that individuals have a chat, the chance to be heard. If you'd like to find out more about how you could either become a volunteer or sign up to receive one of our Beacon befriending calls, give us a call 01902 880 111 or email us at inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's all for now. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers very much for that update, Helen. Up now, we're going to our next block of local news. And kicking this one off, we first hear the voice of Ian.
A landmark former church in the centre of Wolverhampton is to be turned into a major social hub hosting wedding parties and jazz concerts if new plans get the go-ahead. Darlington Street Methodist Church, notable for its large green dome, held its last service in September 2019, closing after almost 120 years of worship. A bid to transform the building into a venue capable of accommodating a variety of community functions has now been submitted to the council by Rajinder Dinza of Wolverhampton-based Hallmark Investment Properties. Councillor Lynn Moran, who represents St Peter's Ward, where the former church is located, said, "I recall the Good Shepherd doing its very best to operate efficiently in this building, which was very difficult indeed given its design, age and need for repair. In principle, we should be preserving our older buildings of interest, but that might well be demanding in terms of refurbishment and safety requirements. If there is an investor willing to bring this building back to a good standard and make it commercially viable, then that is likely to be a good thing." Deputy Leader of Wolverhampton Conservative Group Councillor Simon Bennett said, "Darlington Street Methodist Church is one of the city's most historic buildings and contains a magnificent church organ. Its closure was a sad loss. It is important that the building is restored, brought back into use, and its heritage protected. Any scheme that is brought forward needs to enhance the city, and it is vital that residents and local businesses alike are on board with the city plans. The proposals will see the famous large church organ fully restored and used as a centrepiece in the interior redevelopment.
Work is continuing to build a brand new visitor welcome centre at a popular tourist attraction in the Black Country. Chiefs from the Black Country Living Museum in Dudley said the site would potentially be ready in time for the summer holidays, and the current entrance off Rolfe Street will then close so it can be refitted as a brand new learning space for school visits, which is expected to get underway next year. It comes as work continues at the museum as part of the 1940s to 1960s Forging Ahead development, which will see a popular Wolverhampton pub long lovingly recreated at the attraction. The Elephant and Castle pub, a former Grand Edwardian pub which stood on the corner of Stafford Street and Cannock Road in the city, was unexpectedly demolished back in 2001. But now it is being brought back to life as part of the development, with museum chiefs calling for people to come forward to make sure the site looks as authentic as possible for visitors. To help set dress the walls and tables, it is also looking for promotional material such as wall plaques, mirrors, coasters, and in particular items that were marketed to women such as Baby Sham, Cherry Bee, and Golden Godwin. Collections manager Chloe Taylor said the rebuild of the pub has been going well, with the aim of opening in the summer.
Callous thieves are stealing cast iron drain covers from roads in Wolverhampton, putting the lives of motorists and pedestrians in serious danger. The problem is particularly bad on the Ashmore Park housing estate in Wentzfield, a local councillor said this week. A gang is believed to be behind the theft of more than 21 drain covers on the estate since early 2020. It is thought that the covers are being sold to scrap metal dealers for financial gain. Drivers and people on foot are urged to be extra vigilant amidst growing fears that someone is going to get seriously hurt, or even killed, unless the perpetrators are caught. Councillor Phil Bateman said he was aware of 260 reported incidents of drain covers and other ironwork items being stolen or tampered with across the city over the last 2 years. I believe this is a widespread problem in Wolverhampton, but it seems to be particularly prevalent here in Ashmore Park. There was a bunch of crooks on the rampage who were stealing drain and gully covers. These criminal gangs need stopping because they are putting people and property at risk for their own greed. There were 21 individual reports of incidents in Wentzfield North during 2020-21, continuing right into this year. Some 27 items of ironwork have also been lifted, he added. That is £6,400 worth of replacement costs to the taxpayer in this ward alone, and a total cost of £63,000 across the whole city to date.
Eagle-eyed traffic cops spotted an untaxed car in Staffordshire, which led to a man wanted for a burglary across the border in the West Midlands being arrested. South Staffordshire police officers pulled over the car in Joey's Lane, Billbrook, on Friday and quizzed the three occupants. Officers arrested the man in connection with the burglary and then seized the untaxed car from the driver. South Staffordshire police tweeted, "We have attended Joey's Lane, Billbrook, near to the tip. Three males were stopped nearby and details were obtained. One has been arrested for burglary in West Midlands Police Force area. Their vehicle also had no tax, so will also be coming with us. Great work, Sergeant Evans and PC Redfern." In Dudley, officers chased a car after the driver made a clumsy attempt to avoid them and were rewarded with a haul of Class A and B drugs. The car's passengers evaded capture, but the driver failed a roadside drugs test and was arrested. Officers then found a quantity of drugs in the vehicle. He also had been driving without a licence or insurance, and the car was seized. Dudley Town Police tweeted, "On patrol, this car attempted to avoid us, with the passengers running away. We detained the driver for a search and located Class A and Class B drugs. The driver failed a roadside drug swipe and was arrested. He had no licence or insurance and the car has been seized."
Now it's that time of the week again. It's the quiz questions, brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's 50s themed flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year did rationing finally end in Britain? Question 2. How many TV sets were around in the early 1950s? Question 3. What month in 1950 was the Archers' first broadcast? Question 4. How much did a TV cost in the 1950s? Question 5. What was the average weekly wage for a man? And finally, question 6. Where was the first Odeon cinema built? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck!
Thank you very much for those nostalgic quiz questions, Mina. I'll give those a ponder. Up next, we have our next block of local news. And starting this one, we first hear Angela.
62 homes will be built on part of an industrial site in Hales Owen under new plans. Spitfire Homes has submitted formal plans for a scheme on a section of the brownfield land at the Sandvik site on Manor Way. The proposed development went out to public consultation last year after the firm announced plans to move its operations to purpose-built new premises elsewhere on the site. A statement accompanying the plan says, "The development proposes a range of dwellings with a choice of house types ranging from single occupancy units to some large family homes. An attractive mix of units are on offer from one-bedroom walk-up apartments through two-storey, two- and three-bedroom terrace units to three- and four-bedroom detached two-storey homes alongside 2.5-storey townhouses. A mixture of parking has been provided for each unit. This diverse mix of housing aims to attract and foster a broad demographic and will also encourage a mixed community, all furthering the cohesiveness and sustainability of this development. A choice of homes will include terraces, semi and detached units. This mix reflects the range of housing that can be found in the local area." Spitfire Homes said the site, which will replace Sandvik's old headquarters, had been allocated in the Black Country plan as a suitable brownfield location for new homes.
A once popular bingo hall near Wolverhampton is facing demolition under new plans submitted to council bosses. A bid to bulldoze Mecca Bingo at Springvale Retail Park, Bilston, and replace it with a new industrial warehouse has been put forward to city planners. The application by Maislands Limited and Arringford Limited, a national financial services company, is an opportunity to make better use of an underperforming leisure use, a report on behalf of the firm says. It is considered that the application is of significant merit, namely the provision of new employment floor space in an existing retail business park which will provide jobs and benefits to the local economy. The site consists of the Mecca Bingo building and associated land at Springvale Business Park. It is approximately 3.4 acres in size and broadly rectangular in shape. Proposals include demolishing the existing 1990s building and replacing it with a much higher quality modern development. The site is located approximately 500 metres from Bilston Town Centre and 2.17 miles from Wolverhampton City Centre. As well as replacing the bingo premises with a new industrial unit, the work will see the development of two new service yards, new parking, and a new access road. The site offers an excellent location in terms of visibility and accessibility for industrial use, with good access to the local highway network, said the report.
Membership at Dudley Council Leisure Centres has soared to record levels following a multi-million pound investment. The number signed up went past the 5,000 mark for the first time last month, with more than half the memberships taken out for the brand new Duncan Edwards Leisure Centre in Dudley. There were 399 new joiners in April, with 288 of those signing up for Duncan Edwards. Council bosses said there was still capacity for more members to comfortably enjoy the facilities at the centres and called on people with expensive private gym memberships to check out the savings they could make by switching over. Bosses budgeted £18 million on the new build and millions more on breathing new life into facilities at Crystal Leisure Centre in Stourbridge and Hales Owen Leisure Centre. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member responsible for leisure centres, said, This is fantastic news and comes on the back of our commitment to the biggest spend on leisure facilities this borough has ever seen. We now have three modern leisure centres and the figures speak for themselves. We now have more people who want to use them than ever before. He added, "We still have capacity to take on more members and I would urge people to check out what we can offer. Given what is included with our memberships, prices are very attractive compared to some modern gyms. Our residents may find that they could save quite a lot and still use excellent quality fitness facilities."
A city councillor who worked tirelessly to create the city's historic Sangaree Monument has been announced as one of the community baton bearers for the Birmingham 2022 Queen's Baton Relay. Councillor Bupinder Gakal, Cabinet Member for City Assets and Housing at Wolverhampton Council and Ward Member for Wentfield South, was nominated for his work in the city. He will join other community baton bearers from Wolverhampton, including Palmy Deanser, her son Callum, and Melvin Riley, who were nominated for their activist work. Councillor Gakal's nomination focused on his work on the city's Sangaree Monument, the first statue of its kind in the UK to commemorate the bravery of the 19th century Sikh soldiers. He worked closely with Wentford Guru Nanak Gurdwara to commission the monument, created by Black Country sculptor Luke Perry. The statue, a bronze figure of a Sikh soldier, stands on land in Well Lane, Wentzfield, close to the Gurdwara. The nomination for Councillor Gakal highlights how the statue has helped to unite different communities, backgrounds and religions, forming better communication and understanding between communities and helping those living in Wolverhampton to feel special. Councillor Gakal said, "I'm absolutely ecstatic. It's such an honour to be selected as one of the Queen's Baton Bearers for Wolverhampton. I'm so honoured and privileged to be given this opportunity. I just want to thank the person or persons who have nominated me. The Commonwealth Games will not only showcase Birmingham, but Wolverhampton as well. And I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart for this opportunity."
Bulldozing an historic Black Country pub and replacing it with homes will put a stop to antisocial behaviour at the site, according to West Midlands Police. The force has backed a new scheme for 9 homes at the site of the Fiddler's Arms on Straits Road, Lower Gornal, which closed down 5 years ago. It will see the demolition of the crime-ridden derelict pub, which suffered an arson attack in June last year, and 9 homes complete with 2-car driveways will be built in its place. It comes after previous schemes at the site have been either rejected or withdrawn. In a letter to planners at Dudley Council, West Midlands Police's Crime Reduction Unit said it supported the plans. The Fiddler's Arms, since closing, has been a source of antisocial behaviour, and building 9 new dwellings will put a stop to the ongoing antisocial behaviour at this location, the submission said. Police said that in the year to July 2021, there had been 151 cases of antisocial behaviour reported in the area, as well as 104 vehicle crimes, 56 burglaries and more than 500 violent crimes. A design and access statement accompanying the plans said the development will consist of 1 4-bedroom detached home and 8 3-bedroom semi-detached properties. It concludes, "The demolition of the existing building and the development of this vacant site will be a benefit to the immediate neighbouring properties and the wider street scene as a whole. All parties hope that this attractive scheme will be helped to move forward and be implemented. The development shall be in line with the government's push to provide affordable housing, potentially for first-time buyers."
Up next, we hear how getting vaccinated can help protect yourself from long COVID. With the number of people in the UK now estimated to be suffering from long COVID reaching 2 million, people are being encouraged to get vaccinated to help protect themselves. The Office for National Statistics estimates that long COVID is adversely affecting the day-to-day activities of 1.4 million people, around 7 in 10 of those who reported having it. A total of 398,000 say their ability to undertake day-to-day activities has been limited a lot. Fatigue is the most common symptom, experienced by 55% of those who have self-reported long COVID, followed by 32% with shortness of breath, 23% with a cough, and another 23% with muscle ache. The UK Health Security Agency has previously said that people who have had at least 1 or 2 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine were less likely to develop symptoms of long COVID after infection compared to the unvaccinated. Councillor Jasper Jaspal, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "We know that the vaccine is the best defence we have against COVID-19, and with 2 million people suffering the after effects of the virus in the form of long COVID, it remains important that people take every precaution to protect themselves, and that includes getting vaccinated. We have clinics operating throughout Wolverhampton, offering both walk-in and bookable appointments. So if you are eligible for a jab, please take up the offer. To book an appointment in advance, please call 119. Meanwhile, if you are suffering from long COVID or are concerned about your recovery from COVID-19, you should visit www.yourcovidrecovery.nhs.uk or speak to your GP for help and advice. Up now, we've got our final block of local news for this edition. And starting this one off for us, we hear from Ian.
A city BBQ restaurant and bar was graced by royalty as it celebrated the Platinum Jubilee weekend. An actress playing the Queen made a visit to Rodeo's BBQ in Wolverhampton to help people there to celebrate the Jubilee, as well as break the record for the bucking bronco. Her Majesty's appearance was part of a weekend of activities by the restaurant, which also had designated cocktails, lots of bunting and lots of British memorabilia. Owner Simon Parton said, "We are delighted that Her Majesty strolled into our Wild West town not so long back, and here equestrian history certainly helped as she smashed the rodeo record. We are certainly delighted to join in to celebrate 70 dedicated years ruling our awesome country. Whilst we are an American country bar, we don't forget our roots, and we are immensely proud to be led by Queen Elizabeth II. To pay homage, Rodeo's BBQ has designated cocktails this weekend. We will be playing the national anthem, and there is plenty of bunting around the Wild West town. Our outside area is open for drinking in the sun alongside the canal, with Rule Britannia playing out across the water. God save the Queen."
There were celebrations in King's Wynford as the historic village clock, which is 125 years old, was returned to public view. The clock was originally located at the post office in King's Wynford after the people of King's Wynford donated £100 towards its purchase to mark the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Victoria in 1897. The post office building was replaced in the 1960s with shop units, with the clock always displayed within. But when the Mary Stevens Hospice charity shop shut in July 2021, it was temporarily removed by the landlord for safekeeping while works were underway. Historian Terry Church referenced it in his book Bygone Days in Wall Heath, Mossgrove and King's Wynford, which was launched last November, and interest in the Jubilee clock resurfaced, sparking efforts to bring it back into public view. Vicky Rock, manager of Temptations Nails in King's Wynford, located on the site of the old post office, offered to put it on show in her window display in time for the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. She said, "When I first learnt of the clock and the history of it, I thought it was really important to have it returned, and what better time than before the Jubilee?" King's Wynford North and Walheath councillor Shaz Salim praised Vicky for putting the clock back on public display, and Amy Pearson, also of Temptation Nails, who created an eye-catching window display for the artefact. Councillor Salim said, "The clock is such an important part of King's Wynford. I'm pleased to have the clock return home. The history behind it is amazing. It's important we cherish this." The Jubilee clock, which has a 14-inch dial, is available to see on Park Street in the window display next to Temptations, King's Wynford.
Beverly Knight was delighted to see 50 children and staff from her old Wolverhampton school in the audience of her latest show. Children from Penn's Highfield Specialist Science School travelled to the Garrick Theatre to watch The Drifter's Girl, and Beverly took the time to meet, greet and answer questions from pupils and staff. She said, "This afternoon, 50 kids and staff from my old school Highfield Specialist Science School in Penn, Wolverhampton, came to see me and the lads in The Drifter's Girl. I believe passionately that children must be able to see their aspirations, to know they can achieve them, and have a little Q&A with the kids after the show, and it just lifted my soul to see the fire in their eyes of these young performers. It is a normal comprehensive, not a stage school, but it has great drama department headed up by Sharon Bishop. These kids are from ordinary homes like mine, and I hope they can continue to inspire these children to go for their goals. The singer added, "For all the joy the kids felt watching our show this afternoon, believe me when I say I felt it tenfold." Kathleen Baker loved the experience. She tweeted the star afterwards saying, "It was nice meeting you today and having a chat. You're so good at everything and you're so beautiful at it."
The Body Shop has launched a new activist workshop concept store at the Maryhill Shopping Centre. Opening for the first time last Saturday, it will encourage shoppers to explore sustainable products and recycle beauty product packaging. The Body Shop operates around 3,000 retail locations in over 75 countries and offers an array of over 800 cruelty-free products. Customers will be able to purchase refillable 300ml aluminium bottles to fill any of the dozen of the brand's best-loved shower gels, shampoos, conditioners and hand washes. The new store has been outfitted with sustainable fixtures made from reclaimed wood and recycled plastics to help minimise its environmental footprint. There will be an activism hub where people can discover the brand's activist roots, as well as campaign for social change around issues ranging from gender equality to fighting cosmetic animal testing. Jonathan Poole, Centre Manager at Maryhill, said, "We are thrilled that the Body Shop has chosen Maryhill to unveil their new sustainable store concept. We are constantly striving to bring new shopping experiences to our customers, now and for future generations." The new store opens at an exciting time for the centre as we continue to evolve and improve, with a new look H&M store also underway. The refurbishment will bolster our strong beauty and well-being offering in the centre, alongside hundreds of other household brands under one roof.
A Black Country chip shop, famous for its iconic orange chips, has announced the location of its first franchise shop. Major's Fish and Chip Shop in Bilston is one of the most popular in the region and has now announced it is set to open a new shop in Wensfield. The shop will be situated on Rookery Street in the building which used to house the rookery. Details of the opening are being kept under wraps for the time being, but it is not expected to be long before locals can enjoy the world-famous chips. The founder of Major's Fish and Chip Shop in Church Street, Major Spencer, passed away last year, and the franchise is now run by Major's son, Royston Spencer. Manager Royston said he came up with the idea for franchises while sitting at home during lockdown. A spokesman working behind the scenes of the new franchise said, "We have teased it online and everyone has been guessing where the first one might be. We will be bringing the world-famous orange chips unique to the Black Country to Wensfield. There might be people who haven't heard of us, so come and try the world-famous chips. They were established in 1975 and have the best fish and chips around. People come from all over the country and abroad and we want to be part of it. Also, to thank NHS workers, particularly for their efforts during the pandemic, the shop will offer 10% off any order."
Coming up now on this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have our very own Flashback Roger, with his Did You Know feature.
Hello again everyone. I hope that you enjoyed the festivities of the Platinum Jubilee and that the weather smiled on you for whatever you did. It got me thinking about what life was like when the Queen came to the throne. So here are a few facts about that time. Now then, did you know that? In 1952, food rationing was still endured after the privations of the war. Things like sugar, butter, cheese, margarine, cooking fat, bacon, meat and tea were all still rationed. In fact, rationing did not actually finish until 1954, with sugar rationing entering in 1953 and meat rationing in 1954. At the beginning of the 1950s, television was a real luxury item. Only 350,000 households had a television set. One of the most watched events on television in the early 50s was the Queen's coronation in 1953. Many people watched the event on a friend's set, and it's often quoted, "The coronation really sparked off the national interest in television." Radio at that time was still the most popular source of entertainment and news in practically every household in the country. On the 7th of June 1950, the radio show The Archers was first broadcast, and it's still going today. And the actress June Spencer, who appeared in the pilot episode, was still in the show well past her 100th birthday. Television was in its infancy and a real expensive luxury. The Radio Times advertised a 14-inch tabletop TV set for sale. The price was then over £74, which then was 10 weeks of the average pay. In today's money, incidentally, that 74 quid would be worth £1,500. Britain was recovering from the austerity of the 1940s, and the unemployment rate in the 1950s was at its lowest, of just 1% of the population being unemployed. The average wage for a man at that time was £7 a week, which is 500 quid in today's money. Women's pay was much lower, at only £4 a week. Cinemas were still enjoying their heyday, with many towns sporting at least one to choose from. The Odeon cinemas were the most luxurious places to go. They were the brainchild of one Oscar Deutsch, who ran his father's scrap metal business in Birmingham. The first Odeon was opened in Briley Hill in 1928, and it's said that the word Odeon comes from using his name, and it stands for Oscar Deutsch Entertains Our Nation. Well, however you look at it, these 70 years of the Queen's reign have seen some momentous changes. I wonder what the next 70 years will bring, eh? Well, but for now I'm off to get my lunch, and I'm still eating my way through the tea party leftovers. Oh, blimey, pork pie and trifle again. Oh well, till next time, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Cheers very much for those facts, Roger. Up now, it's time to move over into the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Wolves have a 9-point plan to redevelop the Steve Bulls stand, while the club also hope Molineux will be part of England and Ireland's joint bid to host Euro 2028. General Manager Russell Jones has confirmed the club are pressing on with improvement works to the Steve Bulls stand, something fans have wanted for years. He said, "We understand this is home of the football club and we want to keep improving it. We want our supporters to be proud of it, and we especially understand that the Steve Bulls stand needs some work. We have a 9-stage plan to redevelop this stand. The lower tier is some considerable distance away from the pitch. We're quite lucky and fortunate this is built in 2 complete sections, which is the lower section and the upper section, so we can demolish the lower section. We can actually reprofile it, bring the lower tier much, much closer to the pitch. That enables just over 1,100 seats on top of what we already have." Jones also revealed he wants Molineux to be part of England and Ireland's joint bid to host Euro 2028. "I was sitting in a Euro 2028 bid meeting with Wolverhampton City Council, which could give Wolverhampton the opportunity to apply to be one of the host cities for that championship," he added. "What an incredible opportunity for the club and the city. Of course, making sure our facilities are ready and improved for that date and before is something that's very, very important to us. Albion are trying to secure a deal for Leicester midfielder Hamza Chowdhury. The 24-year-old has emerged a prime target for the Baggies as boss Steve Bruce continues his revamp of the playing squad. Chowdhury, a product of Leicester's academy, played just 12 times in all competitions for the Foxes this season and is again expected to find himself down the pecking order at the King Power Stadium next term. Though a loan move to the Hawthorns appears most likely, it is possible he could join on a permanent deal should the clubs agree a fee. Chowdhury, a former England under-21 international, was previously a target for the Baggies during Sam Allardyce's reign as manager, while Bruce also tried to take him to Newcastle when he was in charge at St James's Park. With funds relatively tight at the Hawthorns, the Albion boss is working mainly in the free transfer and loan market as he looks to inject more pace and flair into the squad. Bruce wants between 5 and 6 new signings, with Millwall forward Jed Wallace, another free agent, high on his list of targets. The former Wolves man has several suitors and is expected to make a decision on his future soon. Departures are also expected, with Albion willing to sell in order to boost their funds in the market. I've got to wheel and deal and beg and borrow and steal, and if I have to sell one of them to make the squad bigger or better, then I will do that, said Bruce. There is change in the air, there has to be. I think the time is right.
Up next, we hear about how tennis clubs throughout the UK are introducing more sessions for visually impaired people, with an emphasis on reaching those who have barriers to getting involved.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Visually impaired tennis is one of the fastest growing sports in the UK for visually impaired people, with more and more opportunities for people who are blind and partially sighted to get involved. The visually impaired version of tennis is similar to mainstream tennis with a few adaptations. For example, the ball is larger than a regular tennis ball, and because it's filled with ball bearings, it makes a sound as it bounces on the ground. The game can be played on a smaller court with a lower net, using shorter rackets. Some courts have tactile lines too, so that players can feel them underfoot. Visually impaired tennis was created in Japan in 1984 and is now popular across the world. It's played in more than 30 countries and has ambitions to become a future Olympic sport. Back at home, more and more visually impaired tennis sessions are starting up across the UK every month. Anyone who would like to pick up a racket and have a go will find that Great Britain's leading tennis charity, the Tennis Foundation, has an interactive session finder on their website. It lists all visually impaired sessions in England, Scotland and Wales. In Northern Ireland, the Windsor Lawn Tennis Club in Belfast is, for the moment, the only club that runs tennis sessions for visually impaired people. For competitive players, the Tennis Foundation also runs regional and national competitions as well as events and camps. There's no excuse not to get out on the court and start serving aces. Defiant Sports in Eastbourne provides visually impaired tennis sessions. They believe getting and keeping people active is the key to improving well-being. They aim to reach those who have a barrier to participation, especially people with disabilities or long-term conditions. In breaking down barriers, they involve the community by asking, "What would you like to do?" Two visually impaired tennis enthusiasts who attend the free sessions at Defiant Sports have spoken about how important the sessions are for them. Alan Pete and Guide Dog Yogi moved to Eastbourne from his home in Scotland to access the visually impaired tennis resources. He says, "If this wasn't happening, I would be sitting at home in my bedroom eating cheesecake. For me, this is a big improvement and a great way of meeting other blind people." Elsie Wilcox, who travels from Hastings to the visually impaired tennis sessions, echoed Alan's thoughts. She said, "It's very, very important because it keeps us active. We want to be active. This is 100% benefit and enjoyment." For more information on visually impaired tennis, the rules and how to search for the nearest visually impaired tennis sessions, please visit the Tennis Foundation at www.tennisfoundation.org.uk and search for visually impaired tennis.
Up now, we're to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, as always, by Mina.
The weather for this week ahead looks to start off sunny and dry, but we will see some rain towards the end of the week. Temperatures for the week will be hovering around 19 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:44 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:33 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 10th of June and Saturday 11th of June, we have sunny spells and a blowing breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. On Sunday 12th and Monday 13th of June, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. For Tuesday 14th and Wednesday 15th, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. And on Thursday 16th of June, we have sunny breaks and light wind with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. So, that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Up next, we get to hear how nature and wildlife are flourishing on the canals of the UK.
Hi Megan, I'm Laura Mulholland, ecologist for the Canal and River Trust.
Hi Laura, it's nice to meet you.
You too, thanks so much for coming out today. I'm going to tell you about how we've got this really important study where we're looking at the habitats along the canals and how important they are to bring habitats into the cities through these green and blue ribbons that the canals provide.
I'm so excited to see the work that you do, and it's a glorious day for it as well.
Yeah, and if we're really lucky, we might see some wildlife today.
Yeah, sounds like a good day out to me. Yeah. Laura, I'd have to say habitats like this are really special for me. There's something that really connects you to them and gets you excited because it's home to so many different types of species.
Absolutely. I mean, being beside the water is just so calming anyway. And then when you have a day like today, when the sun's out, the birds are singing, it's just such a beautiful place to be. Yeah. And where we are here, we've got these softer bank habitats, which are fantastic for species that are in decline, like the water vole, who use their front teeth a bit like a JCB to dig out their burrows, which I just think is so cool that they're just there with their little teeth digging away. And then we've got these fantastic reed beds as well, which are really great sort of in the middle of the summer when the reed and sedge warblers come. They'll build their baskety nests in there. And so you can walk along the towpath and see these water voles and the birds. It's just such a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Because I can walk along reed beds and things and you don't necessarily see the animals, but that's not always the most important thing, because if you can hear them or some sort of evidence that they're there, that's really exciting because it's the mystery of what's going on in those reeds. It's like a drama for wildlife that you're only getting a short glimpse of, and it's so important we protect habitats like that.
Absolutely, and it's really important that we try and bring these softer bank habitats into the cities where you've often got sort of steel piled sides to the canals, or it might even be concrete, but we've got these floating reed systems that we're going to be bringing some more in, and that will allow the plants to grow, and then the insects will come in and forage on the plants, and then hopefully we can bring more and more wildlife into the city so that people can connect with it.
Absolutely, because the wildlife is out there, it's just getting it into the hearts of the cities and hearts of people's minds as well. Thinking of canals and bridges and things, I mean, a lot of this infrastructure was put in during the Industrial Revolution and everything like that, carrying really important goods and stuff into the hearts of cities. But actually, you know, now it's been taken over by wildlife, and it's amazing to see what moves in when you give it the chance to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these canals, some of them are 200 years old, even more in some cases. And these structures, like this really old bridge behind us, have been here for hundreds of years, giving wildlife plenty of time to make their own home out of that structure. Something like this bridge, you could have bats roosting up in the gaps, cracks and crevices. You could have birds nesting in some of the holes. Sometimes reptiles and amphibians might come out and bask in the grass that's growing over the top of the bridge. It's just a fantastic habitat.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? Something that could be deemed as kind of man-made structure, something that, you know, we're the only species that gets any use out of it. But when you look in the details, you look in those cracks and you see a bat, you know, hibernating or in torpor in there towards the end of the spring season, or you see those invertebrates, you realise just how important those structures can be if we give wildlife the chance to move back in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's right. And it's those structures that animals can then make a home of, even in the really urban city centres. We've got some pillboxes along some of our canals that we've prevented people from being able to get into because sadly they were just using them like giant litter bins. But we've created habitat inside them for bats to come and move in. And so that will hopefully give the bats a really safe and secure, temperature stable place that they can move into right in the heart of our city centres.
I love that, and I love bats as well, and I'd love to see, you know, more bats around the city centre.
Absolutely. I mean, the canals are a fantastic superhighway for bats. There's everything they need. They've got the shelter from the trees and the hedgerows on either side. They've got ample food foraging over the water surface, and then those waterways come right into the city centres. But they also, in the opposite direction, can go quite into really rural areas where there are woodlands and places that bats are going to be roosting. It's just a great superhighway.
So walking along, you've got gorgeous canal on this side, and on the opposite side, something which people could walk past and think, oh, it looks a bit messy. And I'd always argue, the messier the better, because this is scrubland is so great and it's so biodiverse, and we need a bit of mess sometimes in our gardens and things, don't we?
Yeah, scrubland is a habitat that people often don't really think of as a habitat, because it's just sort of an untidy area where we've let nature do its own thing. Yeah. After the storms, some branches have come down, so we've left them there. And then the wood decay beetles will come in, start foraging on them, lay their eggs in there, which will then feed on the dead decaying wood, which is then also absorbed and broken down by fungi, which are just incredible.
Yeah, I feel like in this country, you know, and elsewhere, I mean, we're just obsessed with having manicured lawns, neat and tidy, everything, you know, but actually just letting an area grow wild, it makes the world of difference. It gives something a home. So, you know, a place that might seem messy for us actually is critically important when it comes to climate as well.
Absolutely. And those dense brambles that will provide blackberries in the autumn for us and for the birds, but through the summer it's going to be one of the first things that's going to be suitable for birds to get into and build their nests in and feel protected from predators. So we don't want to chop all of the bramble down. It's really important to, in appropriate places, let it do its own thing.
Yeah, it's great. We've got over 100 species of bramble in the UK.
Have we? Really? 100? Cool. That's awesome.
I think it's 108, but I have to check that statistic. But how good. And I love bramble picking, you know, going out and picking blackberries and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get much better than that. And, you know, for us and for everything else, it's just, you know, hands off for a time being. Yeah. And it's brilliant. I suppose one thing that's really important in cities with a lot of water in it like this one is the water quality, because that's causing so many issues, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. There's often surface water runoff will go into the canals, both in the cities from the traffic and in more rural areas from the surrounding farmland. And that can cause an over-enrichment, which can then cause algal blooms, which is then bad news for the animals that live in the water, because they can find that the oxygen drops right out.
Yeah.
But having the open water in the cities is just so great for people to be able to connect to that. And the sound of the water running over the weir, I love that sound of moving water. It's just so good for your mental well-being.
I guess it just connects people as well, because, you know, if we're aware of what's going on in our waterways and our open water like this, then we're going to be more empowered to act to do something to protect it as well, because it's right on our doorstep.
It is. It's, I mean, this waterway is just on so many people's doorsteps. Yeah. They literally just come out of their front door and a couple of minutes walk and they're on the canal next to the water, seeing all of the animals who will call this home, all of the different ducks and the birds in the trees. It's just a fantastic habitat.
Yeah, exactly. And all different levels, from aquatic plants to birds. It's just excellent, isn't it?
Seeing people making the most out of a beautiful sunny day like today is just brilliant. We've had cyclists, people with buggies, walkers, you know, all sorts of people coming down to the canals. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it? Because obviously wildlife uses them as highways, but it's not just kind of the water that is important for that. You've got things like these hedgerows and tree lines as well, which provide these corridors.
Yeah, the hedgerows are just such a fantastic feature for bringing nature into the city centre and connecting up habitats as well, which have been so succumbed to habitat fragmentation. And then as we have these really lovely hedgerows bringing the wildlife into the cities and connecting them back up to the further afield habitats, it's just a really great feature.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, wildlife needs shelter, it needs security when it's moving around, and those hedgerows are invaluable in providing that. You know, things like hedgehog, obviously named hedge for a reason, and all the kind of the rodents and everything else that lives amongst the dense hedgerow.
We need our volunteers to help us to create and improve these habitats, and it's also fantastic for their own mental health and well-being to know that they can come to us and do something like some hedge laying and really make a difference to biodiversity.
I've had the most fantastic day out and about exploring with the Canal and River Trust. It's amazing to see the work that's being done firsthand, to see the wildlife and the habitats that they're directly benefiting through their work. But ultimately, no organisation, charity or individual conservationist can ever do enough. We always need more help, and we need you to get involved now more than ever and help us take action for the benefit of our environment. And of course, there's multiple ways that you can do that, whatever suits you best. So you can get involved with the Spot That Habitat survey, which means that you can go out and about, see the habitats that live around you, and send in information to us. Citizen science is vital. We need all hands on deck for this project, because of course, facing this biodiversity and climate crisis, it's really important we do something now. So use your voice, get shouting, get sharing about it, and get involved.
Have you done any good at the quiz this week? Well, now's the time to find out, as we have the quiz answers.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question one. In what year did rationing finally end in Britain? And the answer, 1954. Question 2. How many TV sets were around in the early 1950s? And the answer here is 350,000. Question 3. What month in 1950 was the Archer's first broadcast? And the answer here is June. Question 4. How much did a TV cost in the 1950s? And the answer here is over £74. Question 5. What was the average weekly wage for a man? And the answer here is £7 per week. And finally, question 6. Where was the first Odeon cinema built? And the answer, of course, here is Briley Hill. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a spinning top. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have an interview with the people behind a UK company producing products to assist people with sight loss.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
The latest in our series of interviews with experts takes as its subject one of a number of companies who supply specialist technology and support to people with visual impairment. We hope to give as many as possible of these UK-based companies the chance to lay out before our audience the services and products which they can offer, as far as possible concentrating on providing information without simply resorting to advertising. Omar Iqbal and his brother Mo run a company called Tyra Technology. We spoke to Mo and Omar about the reasons behind the creation of their business, their philosophy and the services they can provide.
Hello, my name is Omar Iqbal and I'm here today with my brother Mo Iqbal, and we're from a company called Tyra Technology Limited. And at Tyra Technology we provide products, services, advice and training to both people here in the UK who are visually impaired and also abroad as well. We've got a few international clients. And before we explain a bit more about what we do in detail, I just thought I'd explain a bit about our business really. And so Tyra Technology is a family run business, and the journey for us really started when my brother Mo lost his sight shortly after he was born. And growing up, I saw how difficult it was for him as a completely blind person to use technology. Whenever he needed help with equipment or we had problems with his equipment, we both worked together to resolve the issues that we faced, really. I sort of be his eyes as a completely sighted person to figure out, well, why is that flashing and why is it making that grinding noise? So, you know, things like that. And you know, it was quite interesting because it then led us to helping a lot of people that Mo knew through email groups and through a college for the blind, a school for the blind. And it was really interesting because the more we started helping other people, the more word spread about what we were doing. And people started contacting us saying, well, you should really turn this into a business. I'd really, you know, pay for help and support like this. So I went to university and I did my degree in computer science. And it was really there at uni with the support of my mum, Tyra, who the company is named after, that we set up the business. And really, without her help and expertise and support with the business, it wouldn't exist. So, yeah, I mean, we set up the company and now we're operating, helping blind and visually impaired people. And so to be a bit more specific, because it's quite vague saying help and support for visually impaired people, some of the products and services that we do offer are things such as advice on sourcing the best products for your needs. So because we've grown up with a lot of this assistive equipment from, you know, the early 2000s and even the 90s, you know, we can help you understand what software would be best for you, what braille display or daily living aids, phone, tablets and other technology would be best for you, really. So, you know, you can give us a call and we can have a chat about what you need and what problems you're facing.
I'm Mo, and we also offer training and technical support. So as Omar was saying, and one of the things that we regularly get asked about are assistance with products that people have bought, perhaps from other companies, or for example, we have a lot of users who have never used a computer before. They need help learning how to use Windows or how to use an iPhone, for example, because they want to go down the smartphone route.
Yeah.
So we can provide help and support, you know, on a pay-as-you-go basis or on a monthly support basis as well. So the monthly support, we offer a number of packages that where people can sign up for a number of hours. Or if you just want to pay on a pay-as-you-go basis, prices start from £10. So a lot of people find that very useful. One of the main sellers that we have at the moment is a smartphone with buttons on called the Blind Shell Classic 2. Blind Shell is a company in the Czech Republic, and they make a smartphone which is very easy to use whether you're a beginner, you know, a total beginner, whether you've never had a phone before, or whether you're an advanced user, and they're offering all kinds of extras on the phone. For example, you know, you can check your emails, it's got an accessible calendar, it's got WhatsApp, it can also read your post to you as well, and it's less than the price of a new iPhone. So yeah. We're more than happy to have a chat, you know, if somebody needs one of those, because as a company, we actually remain impartial. So as you were saying earlier, Omar, it's a question of finding the best tech for you. If we don't sell the product, you know, we won't try and, you know, do a hard sell on anything that we offer. We generally keep it impartial, and if the product isn't right for you, we'll recommend or try to recommend something that is.
The other things that we offer are things like laptops and computers and tablets fully configured. So, you know, we can basically set up a computer or a laptop and it's ready for you as soon as it arrives. And we also offer help and support with that. We also do things like, for example, the TV Onyx box and Goodman set-top boxes that were sold by RNIB a few years ago. Those were ways of making television more accessible to blind and visually impaired people. Unfortunately, not being made anymore, but we've taken over sort of support of that, so we can service these boxes, the TV Onyx and Goodman set-top boxes, and we can also source them for people as well if they want to make the television more accessible and easier to use. And there are also other specialist accessories, aren't there, for the iPhone, for example?
That's right, yeah. I mean, we also offer an accessory for the iPhone called the Speed Dots cover, and you don't need to know Braille to use it, but in summary, it's a very thin piece of plastic that sticks onto the screen of your iPhone. It's see-through, so you can still use the phone as normal, but it's a screen protector that you stick on the screen, and it's got markings on, so you can use apps a lot more easily. I think it's also important to remember as well that a lot of people feel very daunted by tech, so that's why any product that we sell you actually comes with free support. So it will actually give you a certain number of hours free of charge before you have to start paying extra for support. A lot of our products come with 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, or even more, for example, depending on the kind of product that you've bought. So I think it's quite important to mention that, because growing up, I felt lost when I bought a product. You know, a lot of people would say, well, go and read the instructions that we sent you. Well, sometimes it's just, you know, the questions don't get answered. And that's why we try and go the extra mile in terms of after sales, because of my frustration as a blind person. You know, I think a lot of people, a lot of your listeners might be able to relate with this. And we also offer product repairs and upgrades. So, for example, a lot of our customers have technology, for example, that they've been very used to using, but, you know, unfortunately it's not working anymore. So we in the past we've been able to fix Braille embossers, Braille displays, you know, and modernize them so that they can still continue to be used.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that we want people to take away is that if you need help and assistance in any way with anything technology related, you know, we're here as a family-run business to help you, really. We've been there, we know exactly what you're going through, and we, you know, encourage people to get in touch, really. So, you know, we like to think we're quite friendly and approachable, and you can contact us through a few different means, really. You can call us on our business number, and you'll be put through to me or Mo or one of the team. And so the telephone number, I'll repeat it twice, is 0343-289-7501. That's 0343-289-7501. And the company is called Tyra Technology. So Tyra is spelled T-A-I-R-A. That's T-A-I-R-A. And you can find us online. So if you've got access to the internet, we've got a website. So the website is www.tyratech.com. So www.tyratech.com. And you can also email us as well. So we've got the email address is contact@tyratech.com. So same spelling as the website. And yeah, you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tyra Technology.
Many thanks to Omar and Mo, and we will shortly be featuring more of the companies who provide assistive technology and support to the UK visual impairment market.
TNS Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!